It's high noon.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 43 of Foul Play. That is Fantasy Overwatch League Play. I am Heebie-Jeebie. I am joined by Teoyama, and that's right, everybody. Your eyes aren't deceiving you. Papa Asmith is gone and left the keys to the car with the kids. We are going to hopefully steer this car not into a ditch, but into getting you some good fantasy points. That analogy didn't work out, but that's okay. We had a crazy week of Overwatch last week. Insane upsets, really competitive matches. So in terms of fantasy points, there's a lot to talk about and a lot to discuss. And also, one of the websites we kind of depend on as content creators worked this week. And we also, so we essentially have double the content that we normally get to give to you. So very excited about that. But before we dig deep into the numbers, statistics that we know you love and that we love as well, Asmith, you have some, what I like to call conspiracy theories, you'd like to call stone hard facts. Lay it on me. What's grinding your gears today?
So, I'm sorry to the listeners. You can obviously hear that he misses Asmith very dearly because he just called me Asmith. But
oh shoot,
Asmith is gone right now. He's dealing with some things, and I miss him dearly as well. But I'm not going to refer to Heebs as Asmith just yet. Maybe a little later.
Yeah. Honest mistake.
But no, we're Gucci. But yeah, for like our opening thoughts, State of the Union, I wanted to talk about looking at the upsets from this past week. People were rumoring that, you know, obviously the Justice looked really good, the Mayhem looked really good, the Defiant suddenly looked really good, and part of that conversation has to do with, you know, how teams are suited to 2-2-2. Mm-hmm. And there's been rumors circulating that the Washington Justice crafted their roster for 2-2-2 as opposed to GOATs. And I think that's an interesting topic to go off of because one of their coaches, Avala, she kind of confirmed that, or not kind of, she fully confirmed that with the Korean Overwatch community. Mm-hmm. She said that they didn't expect GOATs to last this long. So they had, when they had the preseason tryouts, they used a Brigitte ban and a 2-2-2 lock. It's not really clear why they would have a Brigitte ban as part of that if they were expecting 2-2-2. But it's interesting that they practice since the preseason for 2-2-2. And that makes you wonder, you know, why, you know, how certain teams, like if they had that information available to them, then every team must have had that information available to them or that expectation. So it's not really clear why they were so much better prepared for 2-2-2. As opposed to a team like NYXL, who, you know, has taken a step back in the latter parts of this season. And then on the other side, you know, we see that, like, obviously Washington Justice, they seem just so ready for 2-2-2 with Corey just popping off so comfortably. Mm-hmm. And also the San Francisco Shock, even though they were barely playing Architect all season long, like now that the meta has changed and the role lock is here, it seems like they've been ready all along for him to just jump in and start dominating. So I think it's an interesting spot to be in, and it adds a wrinkle because none of these, this past week was super unexpected, and all of the upsets were very confusing. It's all an absolute mess, but maybe that sheds some light on why things are going on the way they are.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, maybe they just saw the press and knew, like, all right, well, 2-2-2 is not going to last. There's no way that Blizzard holds up to this pressure from outside forces. Like, they're going to cave eventually. Mm-hmm. Or in fact,
it's not going to last.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And maybe, in fact, they knew that 2-2-2 was happening. The league maybe confirmed it with players. But either way, yeah, it explains some confusion, but man, it doesn't explain some teams' difficulties with the 2-2-2 mm-hmm. switch. Like, NYXL is the perfect example. They should be an extremely capable team to deal with this. They have the firepower. It just, and the tank line, like, should easily be able to succeed in this meta, I feel like. But not the case so far.
It's very strange. I think if you knew that roll lock was going to be a thing, you would be prepared to have like a kind of a designated DPS duo and a designated Widowmaker, especially, which NYXL obviously struggles with, and they were not prepared for it, you know. Yeah. So that part is pretty strange, but it explains why, you know, like Toronto would pick up Logix, why the Justice and Mayhem would each be doing so well right now, given Corey and Saya players' skill on Widow. But yeah, so I mean, I'm just really hoping we're going to hear more about like what teams have been expecting and which teams were expecting Rolock to come about in particular, because I think we're getting to a point in the Overwatch League where like there's enough of a sample size for us to start judging coaches and start, you know, wanting those like NBA, NFL style post-game press conferences where a coach actually has to explain their mistakes. Because I feel like we have accountability for players, but I'm not sure we've seen accountability for coaches yet. You know, like I haven't heard from
Reddit,
any coach.
Yeah,
and even on Reddit, like, it's not like the players are more active on Reddit than the coaches seem to be. Like, Promise from the Valiant, he's pretty active and like he'll talk about stuff, but other than him, like, I'm not sure what coaches are out there really like tackling issues and explaining things, you know. Like, I would love, absolutely love NYXL's coach to explain why they brought Flower in and then played him on Sombra instead of letting him play Widow. Like, it's
Yeah, it'd be incredible. I really hope that localization one just brings more media talent to the Overwatch League. Like, I mean, if you wanted to cover Overwatch League and you live on the East Coast, you have many more chances to do so in person. Get those interviews, however you want to do it. If you're self-creating, if you're working for a website, I think the chances are going to be a lot higher. It's going to create maybe not transparency for the league, but it's going to give people a lot. I don't know. There's going to be people are going to be under a microscope more often and more repeatedly, which will be really interesting. I'm excited to see that change coming up. So, yeah, we'll see. I too would love to see Pavain try to explain the Flower wild card. That would be very exciting to see. And maybe it would be a chance for these late stage bloomer coaches to be like, "See, I told you so. Please don't fire me down to a contender's team. I promise I can stay in this league." Which I'm not sure.
I had a rationale. But yeah, I just think overall, like, conspiracy theory or not, it's good to keep in mind, you know, how teams are prepared for the roll lock, and because it just goes directly into what teams are prepared for this meta. And you know, obviously we thought the Spitfire would be, and they seem to be a mess as well, but we can get into that a little bit later, and more specifically with the leaders and feeders and etc.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what a transition, because that's the section that we're going to be headed to next.
Segway.
Teo, you've grown so much. You're just nailing these segues. So for the leaders category in the DPS section, we have two players in each category, and first I need to mention Sherfor, probably the player that made me like Overwatch, but the player that I followed to the Gladiators and why I'm now a huge LA Gladiators fan. Please don't leave next year, Sherfor. My heart would be broken. In combined score, he had the top in all categories for DPS with 299.19 points, and in the best game, he got 157. That was good for fifth place. Gladiators had two close map fives. In this shock game, I wouldn't say the maps themselves were close, but still, going to map five, and if you're sweeping your opponents, you're actually going to be collecting a decent amount of points. So I'm really impressed with how the Gladiators played this week, and it is evident in Sherfor and a couple other players in terms of fantasy points. This might be Sherfor's highest scoring game ever. And this is also really interesting. It's no longer the Widow player that's like been collecting the fantasy points. I think the Reaper is going to be collecting a lot of fantasy points, because I mean, it's not going to be the May in a Reaper May composition. So if Reaper's played, I mean, Death Blossom would obviously score you a lot of points, but just those general left clicks, you're going to be scoring a lot of points. So, I mean, especially because Roadhog's in the meta, Orisa's in the meta. So, Yeah, I would be looking out to see what teams are playing for Reaper if you were like wanting to change up your fantasy lineup in these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and alternatively, I would say look for the Shimada bro, because as our other DPS leader proved, the Hanzo and Genji puts in a ton of work, and that's that's Erster from the Atlanta Reign. Like, you know, every so often a team doesn't play during a week, and I'm pretty bummed that the Reign aren't playing this week, because I really wanted to see if Erster's you know, if his reign atop the DPS ladder was going to continue. He just popped off last week. Like, it was really incredible to see. He had kind of just become forgotten about, as the Reign generally had been. Mm-hmm. And then this meta just like suits him so perfectly. His Hanzo is nasty. Mm-hmm. He's getting like Genji 5Ks left and right.
Yeah.
And I think generally we would expect the Widow Reaper to get a lot of the kills and the damage done, especially that Reaper, just because you can left click a Roadhog and get easy points.
Yep.
But like when the other DPS, when the Hanzo potential Genji is popping off, you know, then they're just gonna rack up points, because like the Genji 5K happens in like what, 5-10 seconds? Like that ult lasts a very short amount of time and just pulls a ton of kills if you're good at it. Erster, you know, in best on High Noon, he had 172.7, which was top overall, and in combined he had 287.7, which is second overall. So it's just a big week for him. And for the Reign, let's see, neither of those games went to five, so if
172
potential is that high in four maps only, like
that's
pretty bonkers. And they're really on the up and up, and I wish they were playing this week so we could see if it could continue, or if it was just the Eternal and Outlaws being bad.
Yeah, that could be. Man, watching Erster play Genji, I got, man, all kinds of vibes. Like, my jaw hit the floor. It was incredible. Like, I didn't think that was possible in so many fights. It's been so long, but Erster paving the way. So, leaders for the tank category, Gods had an incredible week, as did Toronto, ironically. Yeah, we're saying a lot of unexpected things, but if you're not watching Overwatch League, you need to now catch up, because the score lines are not wrong on OverwatchLeague.com. It was insane. Gods in the combined score got 290.36. That was first overall. And in best score got 155.53. That was second for tanks overall. I'm not sure we've ever had a tank break 300 points. And I think Gods might have gotten the closest in combined.
I wouldn't be surprised if that one Fury week where he played like a ton of DPS was the highest, but I think like for Gods, especially this week, it was, you know, they played the Dragons, who everybody expects to be monstrous, and then they also played the Fusion, who in this meta are supposed to be really good, and the Fusion game went to five maps, while the Shanghai one only went to four. And, you know, for him to put up that performance against teams that are known for their players' mechanical talent is pretty impressive.
I was awesome. And
he's kind of just taken the league by storm recently, as the Defiant have.
Yeah, it's cool. And he's obviously kind of become the face of Toronto in terms of their publicity and media. He's trying to, you know, he's hilarious.
He's incredible.
The guy is incredibly funny.
Top tier meme lord.
Oh, man. Meme lord, and just witty, too. Like, oftentimes, I feel like in this day and age, I'm like a comedy nerd, as I was describing. Like, you can have these meme lords that are super funny if you give them 24 hours on the internet. But, like, Gaunce is hilarious if you give him a microphone and 10 seconds to answer a question. Like, I really do think that he is... I'm so happy he's in the league. This personality is someone we need. We needed someone this funny in the league. I'm excited.
And I'm glad he's doing well, you know?
Yeah, like, that helps.
Because it's a typical thing with athletes, or, you know, esports athletes as well, where, like, literally... just them participating in memes is funny in itself, you know, even if they're not that funny.
Right.
But yeah, he's actually got jokes, you know. It's funny. It's not just like, oh, he's participating, which is cool. It's like, no, he's actually pretty jokes.
Exactly. He helped the Toronto win.
Yeah, and then the second tank leader is not as funny, or he might be funny, I don't know honestly, but
He's kind of fun. I've watched his stream actually. He's pretty funny.
oh really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I could trust it. And that's note on the fuel. He was actually number one in best for tanks. He had a 169.8. Nice.
That's a yeah, very nice.
And in combined, he only had 169.8 because the fuel only played one game. But that's actually particularly impressive considering the fact that the fuel lost 1-3 to the Valiant.
Yeah.
So to put up a bunch of points in a loss in High Noon, it matters less that you're losing than it does in Daily, because Daily takes more away for your deaths, I think, or for your damage taken, something like that. But
For deaths, yeah.
regardless, like it's impressive to see Note regain some form, because earlier in the season, a lot of people were expecting him to be one of the top tanks, and he kind of disappeared as the
Yeah.
fuel disappeared. But it seems like he's adjusting well to this meta, and hopefully, it's a sign of things to come and a
Yeah.
sign of the fuel becoming a better team.
And I would argue that I don't think Note ever disappeared. I think the fuel started having main tank issues when OGE decided that he needed a break and they brought in Trill. Their DPS lineup was shaky. I think
Yeah.
the support line and Note have been pretty consistent performers for the fuel, but yeah, it's hard to notice a good player on a really bad team. So
Exactly. Like
I do
the
see that.
flex tanks. So, I mean, look at Mecco last week. Like the flex tank on a struggling team just kind of becomes nothing, you
Yeah,
know?
that's
So
true.
it's a tough spot to be in.
Well, I will always be proud of Noah. I'm pumped he made Team Canada again. I'm pumped we're running that roster back for the World Cup. I'm super excited. I think it's gonna be a really, really fun World Cup to watch. For me personally, being a Canadian citizen still living in this crazy United States. So, but the support leaders category, I'm gonna take Shaz. Of course, because he is the jersey I wish to buy soon. In his combined score, 350.12 points, and in best score, 187.53. Unbelievable week. Again, we've already talked about it. Gladiator scored incredibly well. Shaz has been playing more. Either one of the teams that sticks to Zen a little bit more, I feel like, than some of these teams, and not just opting to be always Ana all the time. So, Gladiators are going to be still scoring a ton of points in the flex support category. So, very pumped to see Shaz here, number one in both combined and best format. So, that's always a big gold star win for the Shazziator. That's
Yeah,
not a good nickname. We can drop that. Never mind.
it yeah,
Yeah, I'll scratch
we'll
that.
work on something else, but
Yeah.
I mean it's kind of fun. Maybe that'll be like a backup nickname or something.
Yeah, man,
Yeah,
the coolest backup
we'll
nicknames in high
file it
school.
away and bring it back. Yeah, but no, Shaz is an absolute monster, and he has been all season. Like his Zen is easily top three in the league. I guess that's arguable, but I think it
Yeah,
is. Like
easily,
he's
I'm
been
not sure
so
is the term, but I
easily. Yeah,
like.
it's hard to pin one down easily, but he's just been a problem all year. And then the second support leader is Boombox. He put up 302 in combined and 151.4 in best, which is good for second and fourth respectively. And yeah, Boombox, like again, he's one of the he actually suffered from something similar to Note, where like when the fusion weren't playing well, he kind of seemed to disappear a little bit, just because it's hard to be the flex support, getting kills and getting points while you have to try and heal up Carpe, who's struggling to play Zarya, you know?
Yeah.
So he was in a tough spot, but now that the meta has kind of shifted in their favor a little bit, he's back to popping off. And I actually think it's pretty interesting to just looking at both of these guys, like the majority of their points obviously come on Zen rather than Ana. So this week I was pretty curious to look at, you know, flex support versus main support, because a lot of the main supports were playing the Baptiste while the flex support was running Ana. You know, so you would expect the boombox on Ana to have less points than Neptuno on Baptiste, possibly just because Baptiste has a little bit more DPS potential than Ana does.
Right.
And you know, that seems to have not been the case, or the Zen points outweighed everything else enough that flex supports are still on top of the leaderboard. So
Zen points
overall,
and your flex support is almost Moira is almost always going to get played by your flex support too, and that is another character that is healing is matched by her damage output and can do like incredible amounts. And when those are the two point scoring categories, then you're like that's going to net you more points than your other typical character. But if Coalescence 100%. Heals and damages, and you get that ultimate like every 10 seconds, it seems like, then that's going to be a really really big point scorer. So. I think that is why we're seeing flex supports kind of sitting at the top. I think Moira is just giving them the little bit of the edge they need right now to stay above. But
Two of the three heroes that they're playing are going to be getting more points than the main support. It'll just be interesting to keep in mind, like if the meta goes strictly to Ana Baptiste, you know, or if one team starts playing mostly Ana Baptiste, then we'll probably see that point differential between main and flex decrease a little bit.
Yeah, that could be true. I look forward to it if it does, because that would be quite the fantasy shakeup. It would be very exciting. So we talked a lot about good supports. Why don't we throw a bone to the bad supports this week? So I'm going to talk about both of the supports here, and then you can take a different category, Teo.
Beautiful.
Bebe got 97.66 points, didn't even break 100 when he's the flex support for, well, admittedly, Hangzhou is probably one of the worst teams that has went to switch into 2-2-2. Admittedly, guessed by most of the community, me not included. I had too much faith in their DPS players. That was ill put. My apologies, listeners. But Bebe getting 97.66. That is so rough. Hagripian also getting less than 100 in his best game, getting 98.58. Florida doing better? Not really. And Agapin is just not cutting it. So two flex supports getting underneath 100 points. Like, come on, those are main support numbers. So you're really like, very concerning to own those two.
I would touch on that just to say, like, unlike Hagopyeon, who, you know, lost some playing time to a Biram or Byram, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. I would say the Bebe thing is particularly concerning because he was ceding playing time to who is it, Revenge?
Yeah,
I forget who their other flex support is. He was ceding playing time to him earlier this year, but in their game against the Charge, he played all four maps and he still only put up 97 points. So that's really unideal. And just not a great sign.
No.
And then as for Hagyopun, like they had a great week, you know, they had a really competitive week. So for him to still not crack 100 is pretty alarming.
And like you said, admittedly is giving up maps to another player, but I mean, Hagopian is someone that we've talked about that is one of those that are on a bad team, but you can feel somewhat comfortable playing them because I mean, if you have flex supports on your fantasy roster, you want to play flex supports. But if you Hagopian would be one I would be concerned about. Not necessarily maybe I'm putting over a main support if I think the competition is going to be that competitive, and maybe Baptiste, but I don't know. But enough about supports. Teo, why don't you talk to me about tanks?
I will in 1 second. I'm just double-checking Hagopyeon's maps on their game against the Justice. Just to see if he played all five. And he played all five maps, and he still didn't put up over 100. That's pretty disappointing.
Yikes. Hagopyeon.
And then, against the Spitfire, they played only four maps, but that's whatever. He still should have put up over 100.
Yeah.
So as for feeding tanks, the first one is a heartbreaker. It is Gusua. He represents the Hangzhou Sparks issues right now. They are kind of a team in a downward spiral, and he only put up 67.5 points, and that's definitely rough. No smite is back, but it's still not enough. Like Gusra, he's got the Winston play. He can do some Rhine as well. Like if the Spark figure it out, he should be able to figure it out and start putting up points. But as for now, like, you don't want to play a main tank, and you definitely don't want to play a main tank on a team that's struggling like this, because he's just going to get killed a lot, and he's not going to be putting in damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've actually have two other tanks that are feeders, and both of them scored 0 points total this week because both of them were benched, and that's Daco on the Rain and Cool Matt on the Outlaws.
Mm-hmm.
Cool Matt, he's seems like a chill guy. The team still likes him. He, you know, he still has Houston Outlaws stuff on his Twitter. Daco, he removed the team name from his Twitter bio.
Jeez.
Nobody can really be sure what that means, but in combination with him getting benched and the team doing better with FRD in instead,
mm-hmm.
It really doesn't look good for Daco. I think he's a talented player, but like if your team does well without you in, you shouldn't really get upset, and you probably shouldn't do something that's like that's just poor media training to go out there and delete the team name from your bio after they just had their best week and I don't even know how long.
Yeah.
As for Cool Matt, like, it's, you know, the Outlaws didn't win without him in there. You know, Spree wasn't a gift from God. Spree mm-hmm. played pretty well, but he wasn't incredible. I think whoever's starting at flex tank for them, you don't want to play anyway because the Outlaws are in a mess right now. They're kind of dealing with what Spark are dealing with now, except they've been dealing with it all season long.
And Houston had the chance to make that playoff run, but I think with this last week, those hopes were dashed.
Yeah.
And they hit the brick wall of inevitability. So, I mean, man, you're going to be playing broken mental team now. They're just playing to kind of, I don't know, for fun, and then hoping to up their trade value maybe.
Let Jake go on Roadhog. That's all I want.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't seem like a bad option, but yeah. All right. So for the DPS feeders this week, again, a lot of these are going to be due to losing maps, and one of those is Sinatra. Only played map 5 versus the Gladiators, netted a total of 16 points. So if you were ever curious on how much King of the Hill map would net you in points, it averages you around 16. We haven't had a player only play one map like that for a while. So the reason he's on the feeders list, despite just because he was lack of maps, is that Sinatra is, I mean, one of the highest fantasy point scorers we've had throughout the entire season. He was the Zarya player, the plug and play, an MVP candidate, obviously. But now he is, I don't know, he's playing well off the bench. So I don't know. Shock maybe will change their tune eventually. Maybe Sinatra will see some more playtime. But for now, Sinatra is getting very little playtime, doing well when he's in, but not in terms of fantasy. So, geez. I am dropping Sinatra like a hot rock. The other DPS we have is Hureg, got 92 points. So yet again, under 100 points, which we don't like to see. But Hureg, I don't think, is losing playing time, if I can remember correctly. Like, Hureg and Haxall seem to be the DPS duo for Vancouver. And, I mean, Vancouver got the old 4-0 from the Washington Justice. And, that was Twilight Zone stuff. Like, I don't know. Like, I haven't seen this in many moons.
That's a classic trap game where, you know, a team goes into it super confident, expecting to win, and then things just obviously do not work out enough in their favor. I think the big thing there was just the Widow battle. You know, mm-hmm. Hureg has been a great Widow. You know, he's shown glimpses, but like Corey is really here for it. Like Corey is so ready to mm-hmm. just dominate right now. And he is, you know, and I think it's a similar issue that the Spitfire have, where, like, you know, if Birdring is off on his Widow, you know, Widow Hanzo, and he's losing that matchup, the whole team kind of suffers, and they don't have a super sub who can come in. You know, Guard's not going to come in and dominate on mm-hmm. Widow. Yeah. And the Titans, like, maybe they'll have to try subbing in Soman Su. I haven't seen his Widow.
Or Stitch, I guess. But
yeah, but, like, because Hurek seems like he's their Widow specialist, and he's shown those flashes, but Corey's ready to take those matchups right now. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's very similar to Saya player out-dueling Birdring. Like, I think right now what matters a lot is how your sniper can take that duel, and Hureg is pretty obviously not cut out for it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's why he's on the feeders list, because he thus fed. So that is going to jump us out of the highnoon.gg mindset and into the Fantasy Owl daily mindset. As always, we had our contest running Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Thank you for those of you who entered. I didn't do that hot. Teo did pretty decent this week. But
up and down, up and down.
Yeah, of course, we have to shout out our winner from our Foul Play Friday contest, our featured contest. You win like 50,000 experience on there if you win, just a ludicrous number. So thank you for joining, and congratulations to our winner this week, who is Pacific Monkey, won with 947.26 points, obviously the highest that day. On his roster, he had Jake, Sherfor as his DPS line, Mecco and Elsa as his flex tanks, and Shaz and Jonak as his support lineup. Now, that's an impressive team. I'm trying to, like, run the numbers of where he got his cheap players. Jake probably was not ranked
super
high. Jake
was definitely pretty affordable.
Mecco as well.
Mecco was only 9 points, so that's okay, the majority of it. He paid up for Jonak and Sherfor, and then he probably paid market value for Elsa, and then paid down by getting Jake and Mecco. And I think the Jake pick actually really, really worked out for him. Mm-hmm. You know, Mecco only put up 106, which isn't like horrible. It's not as bad.
It's enough to keep
you
afloat, but not enough to make you win. But paying down for someone like Jake to get 163 points is an incredible win. So, like,
that was a great look.
That was some 2020 foresight right there. So incredible looking out. So congrats again to Pacific Monkey. This team looks really good. Another note I had on this was that Elsa has been in our Foul Play Friday winning lineup 2 weeks in a row. So I'm just saying, if you want to win our Foul Play Friday contest, make sure that you choose the Chengdu Hunter's Flex Tank Elsa and put them onto your roster. That means you win. No Elsa, no win. That's just facts. Cool.
Makes sense.
We also got to shout out two of our other winners on Thursday. Motaku won, and Saturday, our very own Teoyama. Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And thank you, everyone, for joining in again. I'm loving Fantasy Owl. I think this is the best format. I'm super excited. I've been joining some of the competitive games, which have been really interesting, dropping my coins everywhere. And I'm telling you, this is my week. You're going to see the Thursday through Sunday shoutouts for heebie-jeebie across the board. Calling it now, this is my week for fantasy.
Yeah, and I just want to give a quick shout-out to Erster for carrying my Saturday team, because he put up like 236 points, and I had people who were near 200. Oh, actually, also shout-out to Unko, because Unko put in some work, all right? Even though they lost, he put in his work, and that was very helpful.
Yeah, okay. I got fifth overall on the Saturday game, so I did somewhat okay here. I wasn't, like, feeding like I was in other ones. But,
no, that was good. That's good.
I mean, Shaz scored an insane game for me that game. Violet did really well. So my flex supports and everyone did really good. My DPS were just kind of average, which is where you were able to defeat me. I had Soon and Decay, who both netted around me 150 points, just under. Not Erster numbers, is what I'll tell you.
No, nope.
Not
definitely
Erster
not
numbers. So, unfortunate, but you have to start somewhere if you're going to rise to the very top and learn the heart of the cards. So, for this week, as always, we need to come up with a fun mantra for it, but because I say it every week, is play your fantasy players that are going to be playing twice in a week and not the ones that are going to be playing once. That goes for combined or best map, because a mulligan is always good. But if you're playing in daily, you don't need to worry too much about this section. So, the teams that are playing twice this week, you have your London Spitfire, the NYXL, the Guangzhou Charge, the Florida Mayhem, Philadelphia Fusion, Washington Justice, Toronto Defiant, and the Houston Outlaws, Seoul Dynasty, Hangzhou Spark, Dallas Fuel, San Francisco Shock, and the Vancouver Titans. And the teams only playing once are the Los Angeles Valiant, Los Angeles Gladiators, Paris Eternal, Chengdu Hunters, Shanghai Dragons. Now, I think that there's two teams with a bye. Oh, never mind. No, Boston does play. So, Atlanta Reign is the team with a bye week, so if you're not going to listen to anything else, listen to this. Do not play your Atlanta Reign players. They will net you 0 points, and not because of bad substitutions. So, probably the keynote, the cornerstone of our show, if you will, where we give you the best fantasy advice of all time, is our potential five mappers. Teoyama, what is one of our games that is going to net that sweet, sweet fantasy points through a map five game?
All right, so I will just go with the first on our list, probably because it's not in any order of likelihood, it's in order of alphabet. And that is the, actually, I guess it's not perfectly in order of alphabet, but that's fine. It's the Defiant against the Mayhem. I think that this has strong map five likelihood because both of these teams are on the up and up. The Defiant looked really good last week. Just to recap their performances for each team, the Defiant beat the Dragons 2-1 last week and lost to the Fusion 2-3. Mm-hmm. And the Mayhem, they lost to the Justice 2-3 and beat the Spitfire 3-0. So each team dominated a formerly high-profile team and lost in a tight match to a good upper-level team, good mid-to-upper-level team.
Okay.
And I think that just shows that, like, both of them, their current form has a lot of five-map potential because they're very competitive now as opposed to before, and they also have the potential to go out there and surprise a really good team. So I think they're a pretty good match for each other. Both teams are in a similar place right now. I'm personally giving the edge to Florida just because I think Saya player wins the Widow battle. Even though Logix was really impressive, I think his McCree was more impressive than his Widow was.
Oh, man.
And I think
the former teammates Widow duel. That is exciting.
It's special. Yeah. It's real special. Yeah, it's a great grudge match potential for Logix.
Yes.
And then, yeah, it's another, like, I'm also really excited to watch that Flex Tank battle because, you know, Gargoyle has kind of, unlike Spree, Gargoyle has looked like a gift from God for the Mayhem, and he's been very key to their turnaround. And similarly, Gods has just helped turn it around for the Defiant. So I'm excited by that game. I think it has a good chance to go to five.
For all those reasons, I would 100% agree. Defiant have another potential five map this week when they play the Dynasty. I think this one is one of our weaker map fives. I think Dynasty is going to win this one a little more clear in a way. I don't give Defiant enough prowess, I think, to take down Soul. I know Soul has their issues, but I know Soul is also fighting to, like, confirm their playoff spot. And I don't know, just something about that edge makes me want to give it to Soul. I think that they are going to not want to lose more than Defiant's going to want to win. But, however, that can still lead up to a good game. Like we said, Toronto's on the up and up, and when you're a team that's got nothing to lose, the up and up, your skill ceiling is undefined. So we really don't know. This could be a really competitive match, could score you a lot of points. The next one I will talk about is Excelsior versus Spark. Both of these teams could replace their logos with just question marks on a black screen.
Yep.
Who knows what you're going to see, and when that happens, that can be a total slugfest. And here at Foul Play, we love ourselves a good slugfest. So I am kind of cheering for it. I'm kind of cheering for Spark to come back and defeat the Excelsior. Excel somehow already have the Atlantic Division locked up because that division is garbage. So really, I mean, they already got their playoff spot. I want to see Spark do some work. So I think that game will be really fun to watch and a close match.
Yeah, I just to touch on that, like, you know, the Defiant and the Mayhem, each on the up and up. I think the Excelsior and the Spark are each on the down and down. And still, for us, we don't really care as long as they're evenly matched to a certain extent and the game is close. It's just funny looking at this game, like, nobody knows what the Widow matchup is because neither team has settled on a Widow player just yet. Yeah, and then our last five mapper, our last potential five mapper is once again the Mayhem and the Valiant this time. Again, you know, to recap, the Mayhem, they had their impressive week, 2-3 to the Justice, 3-0 to the Spitfire. And then the Valiant lost 2-3 to the Dynasty and then beat the Fuel 3-1. I think the Dynasty are in a weird spot, so I don't take too much from them. All I take from that game is that the Valiant and the Dynasty are both prone to slugging it out, you know, and inconsistency can breed competitive matchups, and it can breed inconsistency across maps, which helps for going to game five or map five. I think as well, you know, KSF has been really impressive for the Valiant, but their DPS rotation is a little confusing and it's a little unclear. And I think the Mayhem, like, really, like, the emergence of Saya player and Gargoyle as, like, a big two is really helpful for them. And Saya player is, you know, probably the one of the top widows right now, as he always has been. That's kind of been his one trick skill set. And one thing that I also am excited for is the fate grudge match. You know, I think when we saw Gamsu get to play against the Uprising, the dragons always looked especially fiery, and Fate is definitely a fiery dude.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun to watch him go back at the Valiant. You know, the Mayhem have some mojo right now, and from top to bottom, you know, bare hands talks his junk, and the players I don't think are afraid of doing it either. So I think it's got big slug potential.
Yeah, you got me excited for it. great trailer for that upcoming match.
Yeah.
So for our potential uh-ohs, we have anything that Dallas Fuel touches. We'll be very afraid of playing them. They're not going to score well, and the teams that are facing them or rolling them, much have you, will not be scoring well either, because they're not going to be able to net enough points before the payload hits that final capture point. Another one on here is the Washington Justice versus the Boston Uprising. Boston looks bad, folks. I don't know. I mean, they didn't play last week, so we didn't get to see them.
They were invisible last week.
Right, so maybe this week off, there it was some hyperbolic time chamber business going on. Maybe Color Hex comes out and is just a dominant Widowmaker, and Blase can't be stopped on the May, some fire and ice stuff going on. Who knows? But right now, the Justice is just looking so good. If you 4-0 Vancouver, you have earned a fan in me.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. And so I think Justice versus the Uprising and the Outlaws, I think the Outlaws game will be a bit closer than the Uprising one. But man, both of them, I would be concerned about playing those players, especially on that day. Those daily players, I mean, I guess you play Jake, because that's how we won the Foul Play Friday. But other than that, I am concerned. So those are our potential uh-ohs.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, I would have expected Justice and Uprising to be a battle of the bad teams, and I would have expected it to go to have map five potential. But right now, I just think, you know, considering that Widow matchup, you know, Corey doesn't seem like he could be touched by whoever the Uprising put on Widow, and Linkser kind of seems to have vanished for the Outlaws. So I'm not worried about that matchup.
He did better this week, I thought, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping he'll come back, but I don't think they have a real chance.
Fair enough.
And then the Fuel, like, they need to figure out who their Widow player is going to be before I think they have a chance against the Shock or the Gladiators.
Yeah, they have a tough week, too. Like, that is such a hard week.
Those are
such a
really
hard
difficult matchups.
Oh, man. And both of them in the same week. That is rough.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are coming to our sleepers section, which we have said before is done completely within the Fantasy Owl mindset. Our sleepers last week, we have their average scores if they played twice, or just their normal score, and kind of how they played out. So, Teo, did you win? No, I won.
You won support, yeah.
I won the support category by picking Guido, who and now is just the lock and load flex support for Washington Justice, so sleepy owners beware. But Guido got 137.5 points on average. He got 152.8 in the first game and 122.2 in the second game. So doing pretty well for me. And Teo, you chose Neko, who got a 136.1 average. Getting 146.5 one day, 125.6 the second. A Smith picked Byram. Dude got a 36.9 points average. A Smith, we love you. Come back. But man, oh man, did that sleeper pick not work out for you?
Yeah, I'm not sure if going to the next roles you should be talking about sleeper picks not working out though.
Oh yeah, that's true. We're not gonna talk about I did really well in the support category, but then I
Really well.
gambled again and lost it all.
Yep.
I hit the jackpot my first coin toss. But so before we get to those, let's choose our support sleepers for the week. My
Yeah.
choice for support sleeper of the week. I know I've talked bad about him all episode, and in fact, I'm concerned about it now. But at the time, I thought this was a great idea. I'm picking Hagopian. He's a 12 point on the salary this upcoming week. I really don't think that he'll be doing as bad as he did last week. And that match against the Valiant, I really do think he can score highly. If Florida has any sense, Byron won't hit the stage. Hagopian will earn you a decent amount of points. Please, Bear Hands, hear this somehow. Make this decision. You can be in charge.
Yeah, I actually do agree with that pick. I think both of their games have map 5 potential, and I think we saw like back in the day he does have frag potential. I think when your team is struggling, your flex support isn't able to just focus on clicking heads, but when your team is looking better, and the other team is devoting resources to killing Sia player, hopefully that means Hagopian's going to be able to start getting points, because
True.
I want to get him on some rosters for the cheap.
Exactly.
Although the BRAM thing scares me. My sleeper is in a similar position, and that's Gnecco on Defiant. I think both games this week, Mayhem and Dynasty, have map 5 potential. He only costs 13, which is right at our cutoff point for sleepers. Because when you take that discount, you can go expensive somewhere else. And he didn't have like an incredible week last week, but he scored 68th highest overall in one game and 105th in another, so it's not magnificent, but he showed enough for me to be convinced that in a similar way to Hagopian, as teams get more concerned with focusing down other players on their team, he'll be able to have some room to put in work.
Yeah,
So
I
we'll
hope he
have to
does.
see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we just jump next into the tanks category? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah, let's
cool.
do it.
So for the tanks for last week, that's the stage 4 week 2. Tao, you did win by
Yep.
choosing Mecco, not Gnecco, in this category. You got a 92.7 average points out of him, which isn't great, but the best of the sleepers pile.
Yeah, it's really bad.
106.1 in one category, 79.3 in the other day. A Smith did better than me, still with only a 64.4 average. That's right, it gets worse, folks. Mano got A Smith 77.8 points in the first day, 50.9 in the second. And that's right, I picked the coolest of mats, who scored me a hole not applicable, and didn't play at all. So the 0 points making me a terrible loser in that category. Houston, I actually like Spree, so good on you, but I really didn't like when you made that decision. So, unfortunate, but Teo, since you won, you get to pick your sleeper this week for tanks.
Beautiful. And I will give Spree a shout out too. He actually performed pretty well. I think he might have, if he had been chosen instead of Cool Matt, he might have won this category.
Yeah, that's true.
I am going to do it again. I'm going with Mecco. His cost has risen from 9 to 10, which is still super cheap,
Oof.
and I still think he's worth it. I think,
Especially if you need to fill out the rest of your roster with a cheap player. Like,
Yeah, like
if
you can
you've
just
gone
go.
hard on a couple other categories, like that is he is a great fill-in number. A
And
great fill-in number.
we've seen that from a lot of the winning teams in daily is like if you can pay up for somebody who's going to score over 200 points, then you can pay down and get somebody who costs very little
Exactly.
as long as they're going to play enough maps to put up more than a zero,
Yeah, to keep your head above water, that's all you need.
Yeah. And I think with a game against a Spark and a game against a Charge, NYXL has a chance to be competitive this week, and Mecco should be part of that because there's nobody else to play instead of him, unless
Cool.
they choose to do Nene, which would just be silly.
Yeah.
Then I guess I'll actually give an honorable mention for A Smith because there was a second tank I was considering.
Okay, so we're choosing a sleeper for A Smith, and if he wins with this one, it's our fault, not his.
Yeah, that'll be. We'll take it's in his honor. You know, it's an honorable mention in Ace
Exactly.
Smith's honor, and that's RCK. He only cost 12 this week, and he hasn't been very impressive, and the Uprising have not been very impressive, but they had a week off, and he's pretty cheap, and they played the Justice, which in another world in which I hadn't just seen Corey dominate, I would expect that game to be competitive. So he's definitely a worthwhile honorable mention at that price
But
point.
I mean, if the witch's spell that Wizard hung casts on the league to make the Justice win 4-0 wears off this week, then it could be a competitive match and RCK will score a decent amount of points. So you're welcome, A Smith. My sleeper for the week was gonna be the main tank for the LA Gladiators, Roar, coming in at 13 points to cost. Pretty expensive for a main tank, honestly, but that's because Gladiators have been map fiving it for a while now. I would, geez, yeah, I don't know. Don't believe me. I suck at these sleepers, but that's who I'm choosing. And if you are, for some reason, a heebie-jeebie follower in terms of sleeper picks, then Roar's your man. Map 5 confirmed. It's going to happen, so make sure you choose that one.
Yep, map five against the fuel. This
Against, I hope it doesn't happen, but it the you can't argue if it happened twice in one week that it has to happen the next week. So,
course.
on the last category for sleepers, of course, is the last category that you can select in your Overwatch game. That is DPS. Teo, you did win again. This
Let's
one
go.
by quite the landslide.
By a lot.
You definitely saw into the future and chose Corey for 13 points, scoring you 191 on one day and 149 on the second day, averaging you 170.3 average points. That's unbelievable for a sleeper.
Seriously, that is
Maybe the
so
best
much
sleeper pick we've
value.
ever had on the show, at least in this format. A Smith did considerably less good. In fact, I would say bad, but I did worse, so I can't say bad. Hooreg cost him 12 points, and he scored 87.9 points. That is his average because the Vancouver Titans only played once, but they got rolled by the Justice. So your sleeper pick, in fact, defeated A Smith itself. So well done to you, Teo. And then,
Thank
big
you.
surprise, I played a player who didn't play any maps at all. I played Ivy of the Toronto Defiant. That guy's not seeing the stage. I got a big ol' NA again. So, Teo, you win again. Congratulations. You beat me
Thank
2-1 this
you.
week. But I need you to pick a sleeper that you are going to lose with this upcoming week.
Yeah, I just want to tail off the Corey thing. Like, getting a guy for 13 points who scored 191, which is 10th most overall on that day, or actually over like across all days, is just bonkers. So like that's exactly why the sleepers category matters, because like we mentioned, if you can get somebody on the cheap who does fairly well and pay up elsewhere, like that's great. You know, like if you could, but if you can package a Corey on the cheap and an Erster who's expensive and does well, then like you're set up.
You are Richie Rich.
Leading into my sleeper for this week, I do not think he has that kind of potential. But I think for the price point, you know, Corey is very obviously no longer costing 13, or under 13 even. This week, the best DPS sleeper I could come up with is Libero. And you know, I don't think NYXL gives me any. I don't have any faith in NYXL right now, but I chose Mekko second week in a row. I'm choosing Libero this time. I'm very excited to be proven wrong. And I think Libero is his, since the dawn of Overwatch, Libero has been known for a wide hero pool, for being a flexible, smart player, for being the first to figure out Sombra, the first to do stuff with Mei. He's so nifty. He's so this. He's
He's so
crazy on
nifty.
projectile. He's so incredibly nifty. And I think
Man.
last week I went for a sniper who clicks heads. This week I'm trying to go for the jack of all trades. I'm hoping NYXL can turn it around. Libero at 13 points. They play the spark and they play the charge. In an ideal world, they can turn it around. Libero plays the entire time, and that Widow, because he's not, they shouldn't play him on Widow. It happened once last season. I did not enjoy it. I think let that second DPS spot rotate, but Libero should play the projectile. He should play the Hanzo, play the Pharah, even though they don't want to for some reason. Yeah. Hanzo, Pharah, Mei, all of those things suit his skill set really well. Mm-hmm. So if the rest of the team figures it out around him, then he should be a great value and he should put up a ton of points.
All right, good choice. The A-Smith choice that we made this week for him without his consent is Blase. like we said, we think Uprising has a decent chance, at least in one of their games. We think against the Justice, maybe not so much. But in terms of people for DPS that are 13 and under, not age, but in terms of points, Blase, I think, could net you a decent amount. Now, my choice, on the other hand, is top-notch. This is the Corey pick of this week. The Vancouver Titans are not a passive... They are not a sad Yeti. They are an angry, revengeful Yeti. As shown, following the Stage 3 playoffs, they lost to the Shanghai Dragons, but then defeated them the very next week. I am picking Hureg as my sleeper of the week. Only 12 points to cost, so cheaper than everybody else's, but still an incredible player and is not looking like he'll ever leave the stage, which for a sleeper pick that doesn't leave the stage, I'll take it. I will take Hureg, and I think that he's going to score extremely well this week. If nothing else, then I just want to win.
Yep. No, actually, I think that's a good pick. You know, if it's true that he's going to play all maps, then they have winnable games against the Spitfire and the Fusion, and ideally competitive games.
And yeah, both those teams are exactly going to be competitive, potentially map 5 games. So I'm very excited. This week is going to be really exciting because it's always exciting to watch a week of Overwatch kind of after the storm clears. After we have an insane week like we did last week, we kind of get to see where these teams land, how they play up to each other, and we get to see if streaks continue, if they're brought to a terrible end, namely Justice. What can they do? Is this going to be ongoing till the end of the season? Are they doing their weird tragedy tour? Is that what's happening? I don't know, but I'm very excited. So make sure you're tuning in this week to watch the games.
Yep. Should be fun this week, and it's time to see if the mess starts getting a little tidier, if there's going to be some Marie Kondo action and the league's going to start filing into order so we can actually understand what's going on.
Exactly. I want my fantasy points to spark me joy, and so that is what we are looking for. Thank you everyone so much for tuning in to Foul Play again. This has been episode 43. Make sure that you're entering our daily leagues on fantasyable.com. We pay out so much experience, so just make sure you're entering our leagues, jumping in there. Congrats to our winners this week again. Remember, we shout you out if you're going to be winning any of our leagues, and you get to compete with us, and maybe someone can dethrone Teoyama from the Saturday tournament. I don't know, maybe
you guys can try. You can talk your junk if you do try, but I don't expect a lot.
I think the next episode will just be a big, there was an attempt, because he will be on top yet again. All right, well, thank you so much. I have been Heebie-Jeebie. He has been Teoyama. And until next week, pick Erster. See you guys.
Adios.